time.
This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Those are the numbers to call for the next 3 hours. Here, getting you ready for a game against San Francisco tomorrow. And, of course, big football games today. How about that? Double header on the NFL Network. So lots to go over, and let's get going with our headlines. Well, news on the Seahawks as far as injuries. Rashad Penny's going to miss the game with a knee injury suffered on Monday. And so looks like he'll be down for the week. DJ Fluker's not going to be able to play. Officially listed as doubtful, but he's going to be out. KJ Wright may be within a week of getting back on the field. We'll see if he's able to go next week, but he's definitely not going to be able to go this week because of the knee injury. Doug Baldwin is going to play. It looks like he's now fighting a hip injury. He's had so many injuries this year, but he's been able to fight through it, and it looks like he's going to be out there in the game against San Francisco. 49ers, of course, Jakriski Tart is not going to be able to play at safety. He's going to be taking the spot with DJ Reed, a rookie that's going to be out there. In fact, 49ers are going to have six rookies out there starting, including a rookie quarterback in Nick Mullins. As far as other news, bad news for the Raiders. How about Martavius Bryant? Looks like he's not only suspended for indefinitely, a lot of people think he's not ever going to be able to play again. Apparently, I don't know what he did during this suspension. Obviously, for substance, but apparently he really angered the league. And so that turned out to be a botched trade for the Raiders. They gave up a third-round pick to Pittsburgh to end up getting him. Carson Wentz, who has a back injury, of course, it's a vertebrae that's damaged. He's now officially out for the game against the Rams. Nick Foles gets the start going against the Los Angeles Rams tomorrow. That's not necessarily good news. We don't know if Wentz is going to be back this season or not. He's had some back problems coming out of college, but apparently this kind of cropped up on him and it's been bothering him for some period of time. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How you doing this fine Saturday morning, my friend?
Hanging in there.
All right. Hey, you're speaking of... Man, what's wrong with Martavius Bryant? You know, I mean, does he get it?
No. He definitely does not get it. I mean, how bad is that? I mean, it's like, constant suspensions. You would think that things were going to finally work out for him in Oakland, and that turned into a disaster. Really, really bad.
I mean, just awful. To see a guy with that much talent.
You're right.
Just to allow himself to have the potential to do better for him, his family, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just to let it go away like that. It's just unbelievable.
It really is.
Unbelievable.
I mean, because again, he was one of the better deep threats in the league, and you would think, okay, fine, you have your problems, but again, some people can't escape their own problems.
Yeah, I know. There's nothing you can say about it, but the way that he it's just awful.
Yeah.
Let's just talk a little football, Mr. Clayton. We got something coming up on today. You got Houston and the Jets. I know it's in New York. But Houston has a lot to play for because I tell you the Colts are
they're
right
coming
around the area for him, Mr. Clayton.
No question.
Right in the neighborhood. How do you see that working out? Did the Jets call it in? You think right now?
You got a coach fighting for his job and he's going to lose Todd Bowles. Then, in fact, there's a lot of rumblings that Bowles gets fired. He could go to Arizona and replace Steve Wilkes, which, they like Todd back in Arizona. So there's that thought, but we'll see if that ends up going anywhere. But, you figure that they are at home. I mean, one thing, and this has been Houston, the Texans have had an easy schedule, and this is part of the easy schedule, taking on a 4-9 Jet team. And so, they've been able to take advantage of it so far. They've got a great young quarterback in Deshaun Watson. I mean, the key for the Jets is getting points, and that's where I think they're going to be a problem, because the one thing that Bill O'Brien has had to do because of the bad Texans offensive line is make sure that you don't have Deshaun Watson throw more than 25 or 26 passes. I mean, look what happened last week. He threw 31 against the Colts. He gets sacked 5 times. He gets hit 9 times. So that's 14 hits on him, and so you've got to limit the number. So if they can definitely try to get some kind of an offensive lead, 10 points into the second quarter, then I think they have a chance to win.
And that's the key to the Texans. I think that's where the one area where they might have a problem, and that's their offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, Deshaun Watson has been sacked a lot this year.
Agreed.
You know, And that could be a problem for them coming into the playoffs. I mean, on the defensive side, I think they're going to be okay. Now, they've been giving up a lot of yards lately, but they're going to be okay on the defensive side. The offensive line, they've got to have the ability to allow him to function. Because when you start to notice quarterbacks that tend to run a lot, they tend to get hurt a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just hoping that you can see some kind of continuity come together with their offensive line to at least help him out to be able to get their offense going. What about, you know, I'm going to tell you, Mr. Clay, this game here is very intriguing. Cleveland at Denver, you just look at it. Denver doesn't have, you know, they got rid of Demaryius Thomas.
Right.
They lost Manuel. He's hurt. He's out for the year. Who are they throwing the ball to?
I know. They,
well,
no, I'll tell you what, though. They've got a good young group of receivers. Cortland Sutton is real good. Deshaun Hamilton offers some things. But, it did hurt losing Emmanuel Sanders. But I thought, honestly, I was kind of surprised how well he's done this year. Because last year he was pretty much looking like he might go on the decline. Then, of course, he comes out in the Seahawk game. I think, what did he catch, like 10 passes or so? And he's had a very good year. But, you also look at the numbers. The last three games, Case Keenum has thrown for under 200 yards.
I know, and everybody look at the Browns and say that's the Browns are not the same old Browns coming to town.
No.
They play good defense, they got a running game, they got some young wide receivers, and they got a quarterback that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the Browns giving them all they can handle tonight.
I would have to think so, sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough, interesting game to kind of watch.
Yes, definitely it will be. The only reason I could give Denver the edge is because they're at home. That's mm-hmm, the only reason mm-hmm. I give them the edge. But I tell you, the Browns, I know they're going to be looking on the coaching search. But Greg Williams has made them pretty formidable coming down the stretch right now.
He has.
They're pretty
agreed.
Formidable, yeah. They're pretty interesting.
But again, I don't think he's going to get the job.
Was that Mr. Clinton?
I don't think he's going to get the job.
You think he will?
I do not.
I think Mike McCarthy might end up there.
That's the guy that I think is going to get it.
Yeah, I think Mike McCarthy is going to be off the street, Mr. Clayton, after the season in no time.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me on that. Yeah, he's too good of a coach. Speaking of Mike McCarthy, his ex-team, Green Bay, goes to Chicago. Now, Aaron Rodgers was talking about they got to control their own destiny and they got to just keep winning. I think Chicago might be a roadblock for Green Bay on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, and that'll be it for Green Bay. I mean, what, they're pretty much almost out of it right now. And, you know, they don't have Brian Bulaga. He's going to miss the game. Who's going to block Khalil Mack? But one thing is, I mean, and this is one to kind of watch here, is that Mitchell Trubisky has been struggling. I mean, he's had three bad games in a row, two before the shoulder injury and then one after the shoulder injury, and his numbers are coming down. So they're a little bit more vulnerable, and we're still trying to figure out how good Trubisky is.
It's hot and cold with him, Mr. Clayton. You're definitely right about that. You know, there's no consistency with him right now as far as that's concerned. That could be a problem for them post when they get into the playoffs. Looking at the NFC side of the playoffs, do you think it's going to stay the same? Minnesota will try to hold on to that sixth seed?
Yes. I think they'll get it by default. Because you look at Philadelphia, no more Carson Wentz. They're 6-7. Carolina, I mean, they're on a 5-game losing streak. And then you look at Washington, now they're completely a mess with injuries. So I think by default they'll be able to get that.
Jeez, Carolina, what do you think is the issue there? Is it Cam Newton's injury, Mr. Clayton?
No, I think it's defense. I think what it is that no pass rush, problems in the secondary, some age issues on defense. So it's really coming crashing down quickly. I mean, you look at the five games that they've lost. I think in those five games, they've given up more yards than any other team in football. They're ranked 32nd.
Yeah, and that's not good. We're coming down the stretch. Another intriguing game on Sunday, Mr. Clayton. The Cowboys go to the Colts.
Yes.
And now the Cowboys, I'll tell you one of the biggest issues that the Cowboys have, their offensive line is not healthy.
No.
Zach Martin's That's missing his first start. Tyron Smith has been banged up, and he hasn't had a good year. And they don't have their starting setter, Travis Frederick. Yeah, that line went from the best in football to being a lot shakier than you would expect.
A lot shakier. I guarantee you, on the average, Dak Prescott must get sacked at least 4 to 5 times per game.
Mm-hmm.
On an average, I mean, and you know, that is not a good recipe if you want to try to maintain and get into the playoffs. If your offensive line is it shows anywhere of shakiness, teams can shut you down. Because, you know, in the playoffs, they allow you to do a little more chucking on those receivers.
Right.
So that could be a problem for the Cowboys coming down the stretch as far as – you know, we were just talking about Minnesota. I mean, what is it? Is it Kirk Cousins?
I think a lot of it's the play calling. Part of it's the offensive line. Kirk has not been great. There's no question about that because he's not getting the ball downfield hardly at all. But that was a mess. Then, of course, they fired John DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator. Coaches aren't happy on the staff. No, it's a pretty bad situation.
I look at it this way, Mr. Clayton, and I understand they talk about the kid that went to Denver, the quarterback.
Case Keenum.
I understand. Yeah, Case Keenum. But do you think they pay Kirk Cousins a little too much money to think that he would be the guy to come in and get that done?
Well, I mean, he could have got $30 million to go to the Jets. So he had to pay him.
That's a lot of. I don't know. And, you know, do you look at him as that type of player, that type of quarterback?
He's good but not great, but that's the only way you get him. I mean, let's put it this way. Of quarterbacks that are starters, rarely do they hit the street, right? Now, of course, they hit the street because Cousins played out the two-year franchise tag, and there's no way that they could keep him. They wanted to keep him, but they weren't going to be able to pay him over $30 million, which would have been the number. But it's rare to find a quarterback that is like that that comes free. So they took the gamble, and right now the gamble has not worked out. Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, have a good one. We'll talk next Saturday,
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, good morning, John. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Good, good. Have you done all your holiday shopping, John?
Not a single thing. Nope, haven't even started.
Yeah, me neither. I'm thinking about it, though, John. I'm thinking about it.
That's me, too. Yeah, giving it some thought.
Right. Well, Martavis Bryant is now out of the Raiders equation for some time.
What a
time,
disaster,
like, John.
Huh? That was a bad trade.
Yeah. Well, you know, not just as a football fan, but, you know, we as just individuals, when you see that, you just think, my gosh, what a sad story. He just can't seem to get his act together.
No, and from what I gather, I mean, I don't know what he did during the investigation and appeal or whatever, but he really angered the league. So a lot of people think he's never going to play again.
I'm sorry to hear that. He's such a talent.
Yes.
It's a real shame to see him. And, of course, the Raiders gave up a third-round draft choice to get him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yet another one of the great Raider moves.
Oh, John, please. We could talk about that till anyway, one of the other Raider moves, not necessarily on the field, but in the office, front office, is Reggie McKenzie's bowed out. And, you know, we talked a bit about that on this show. And I liked Reggie a lot, John. I thought he did a great job with the difficult situation. I mean, it was a mixed bag, though, to be frank. I mean, he did make Executive of the Year, if I'm not mistaken,
right,
in 2016. And he was great with the cap, John. I mean, he really got us out of, salary cap hell, if you will.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, and some of his free agency acquisitions were not so bad. I mean, he did, I thought, better than average with left guard Kelechi Osemele, excluding this year.
Right.
Not so good with Jared Valdir. You know, he was a typical, Raider left tackle that they found. He was a Division III player, and they couldn't sign him, and he goes to Arizona. And those were not good signs, John.
Agreed.
That he let someone like that out of the house, Are you surprised by the timing of the situation, John?
I am, because, I mean, normally you want to wait through the season, but
right.
I mean, you can see, I mean, he was going to get let go at the end anyways,
right.
But it was kind of unceremonious, and that's the thing that scares you even more, is that means, there's now less voice to say, John, that's not a good move, because right. Every move John's made pretty much has not been very good.
I agree, at least on that end.
Right.
As far as you know, play calling and such. It's become better. Mm-hmm. I think they're actually matching the team's strengths with what they can do on the gridiron, which is good to see. And I think that John had to kind of really work on that avenue with his coaches. And it's good to see they're at least competitive on the gridiron. They actually won the game last week against the Steelers. I found that amazing.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
And, you know, Big Ben has never won in Oakland, John,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of remarkable. The city of Oakland has sued the Raiders because they're planning on leaving. No surprise there. We've talked about it again on this show. So as a result, you know, Mark Davis is looking for a temporary home. So what do
so
you think,
at
John?
I mean, Seattle's one of the places, apparently.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to happen, no. John. I mean, for heaven's sakes, that wouldn't happen. I don't know. I don't know where they'll end up. I'm just so surprised at all this. But by the same token, not necessarily so surprised. Again, we've been talking about it. What do you think the odds are? Are they going to succumb and go down to the Levi Stadium down in Santa Clara, John?
I'm not sold on that. I think that I don't know if they're welcome at Levi Stadium. That's the thing. I mean, that would be the logical move. That'd be the easy
right.
move because they don't have
right.
to move their training facility. They
right.
can, you know, just commute for the nine games that they're going to have there. I mean, it would make the most sense.
Right, and, you know, of course, they don't have one home game because it's going to be in Mexico City or
right.
London, the NFL announced earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
No surprise there. John, I got a question for you on elite quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So what are some of the key metrics that you use or attributes you look at to figure out who the elite quarterbacks are?
Well, I mean, what I look at is first the fourth quarter comeback ability, you know, ability to bring the team back and win like three times a year. I usually uh-huh. look at like 65% completion as being, you know, at least a minimum. All that number is starting to go up now the way that the quarterbacks are completing passes. So that number goes up, you know, ability to get 30 touchdown passes and, you know, throw less than 10 interceptions or maybe less than 12 interceptions. I look at that as being one.
Sure.
Then, you know, I think one of the ones that's kind of that slips under the curve is, you know, you've got to have a quarterback average like about, you know, 7.2 yards an attempt or better. That because, again, if you get down to 6.4, you're in pretty bad shape. You're not moving the football and teams are ganging up on you. So you need at least 7.2 there.
Yeah, you're not matriculating the ball down the field, as the late, great Vince Lombardi once said.
Right.
That segues nicely with what you were talking about earlier in the week with some of your cohort there at the station about Tom Brady and how he can win you up to four or five games just because mm-hmm. he's Tom Brady.
Right.
I mean, that says it all right there.
Well, because, I mean, you saw it with the same thing with Peyton Manning. It's each year they're sitting there with 12 and 13 wins, and do they really have 12, 13 win talent? No. That's why you look at Russell Wilson. You know, he's worth three or four. I mean, this team would be, you know, five or six wins without him.
Yeah, and for all the Seattle fans listening and out there, you know, here's where Russell Wilson is great. So let me just give you a scenario. The Raiders, for instance, fourth and five with a minute and a half to go in the fourth quarter. They need to get a first down. They call a play that's just going to go to their running back, and it was a failed play. And Carr's rolling out to the right. What does Carr do? He throws it into the ground. Fourth and five. Okay, game over for the most part.
Right.
If it was Russell Wilson, you know what would happen? Russell Wilson is a gamer. He'd make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. Those are the intangibles you're looking for. Not that I don't like Derek Carr because I like him very much. But those are some of the attributes that you need to win ball games. And isn't that what late, great Al Davis once said? Just win, baby.
That's it.
And Russell Wilson's doing that all the time.
Yeah, and then there's people that when he has an off game, like when he goes 10 for 20, not realizing, hey, that still is a talented Minnesota Viking defense.
Indeed. Indeed. So, yeah, Russell Wilson is just such a great player. And is he in your elite status, John?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he is too, just by virtue of what you talked about earlier.
Yeah, because, again,
okay,
he's a
John.
Top five quarterback in my opinion.
Yeah, indeed. Now, what about Pat Mahomes? I mean, is he petering out, John, a little bit at the end of the year here?
No, I don't think so. No, I think what it comes down to is that he doesn't have Kareem Hunt, and he also yep. doesn't have Sammy Watkins. Tariq
right.
Hill's playing banged up, and, you know, the guy's incredible. I mean, I watched him last week, and he is just absolutely amazing how good he is.
Indeed, yeah. I think we're all convinced of that now, even a skeptic such as me who doesn't like to say that about the Kansas City Chiefs, John.
Right. But that was a great game. Hey, I got to run.
Okay, John, take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brent. Hey, Brent.
Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm one of those guys you guys refer to as a hardcore baseball fan. So
okay.
I have a football question with an ulterior motive.
Sure.
I'm wondering what the draft status in the NFL will be for Kyler Murray.
Well, I mean, some people think he's going to go first round, probably more toward, I'd say, in the somewhere in the, you know, 8 to 13 range. And now the question is he going to turn pro? Because again, I think this all his intentions are is to play baseball.
Well, I'm hoping so, of course.
Uh-huh.
Baseball doesn't get a hold of those types of athletes all that often.
Because he's a first round pick in the A's, correct?
Yeah, he was the 9th pick overall in the baseball draft.
Correct, yeah.
So I was hoping that he would drop football completely, start concentrating solely on baseball, and I think he could become an incredibly good one if he does that.
Oh, no question about it. But yeah, he's got. Let's put it this way: it's kind of a nice position to be. And I'll tell you one thing on the football side of it. I mean, you look at Patrick Mahomes being a baseball player, Russell Wilson being a baseball player. There's an advantage if you have that baseball background if you're a quarterback, because it gives you the ability to throw at different angles. It gives you that elusiveness, the ability to slide. You know, the baseball has helped Russell Wilson so much. Same thing with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and they know how to slide without getting hurt.
Yes. No question. But, yeah, I think right now he would go in the first round.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll come back, talk a little preview of the game tomorrow with Matt Maiocco. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
And joining us is Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports Bay Area. And two times in 3 weeks, the Seahawks take on the 49ers. Yet the funny thing is, even though this game was so close, Matt, as far as the timing and proximity of it, is that it's what's amazing is that there's significant changes on the 49ers since that game. It's almost as if they're playing a little bit of a different team for how young this team is getting.
Yeah, especially on the defensive side. You know, they made some changes after the game in Seattle, after getting their butts handed to them. You know, I think they decided that they have to see what they have in some of the young players. And, you know, they're obviously still trying to win games, but I think it feels a little bit better when you're winning games with guys that you know are going to be around for a while. So since the 49ers and Seahawks played, there will be some new starters. DJ Jones, nose tackle, takes over for Earl Mitchell. Marcel Harris, who started up there in Seattle at strong safety, he played a lot better in week two than he did week one as far as getting into the lineup. I know he missed a lot of tackles up there in Seattle. I think 49ers as a team had a difficult time against the Seahawks running game. So they're going to finish the season off with Marcel Harris at strong safety. DJ Reed, another rookie, stepped in at nickelback in place of Kaywan Williams, who's been injured. They went with Elijah Lee at linebacker over Malcolm Smith. So last week against the Broncos, they did a pretty good job, especially in run support, going up against Philip Lindsay. And the 49ers looked younger, faster, and more energized. And the reason for that is because they were younger, faster, and more energized. So it's going to be a little bit of a different team that the Seahawks will face tomorrow at Levi Stadium.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's, I think, going to be the challenge is that, you know, when you have youth and well, yeah, I watched it all year with Seattle, you're going to have some mistakes, but also you're going to definitely have more energy. But I'll tell you the one thing, and I know I talked to John Lynch on Friday, is that as bad as that game was, 43-16, 49ers played hard the entire game.
That's been something that they've done. You know, they haven't given up on, you know, the coaching staff. They haven't given up on the organization. You know, as is often the case, whenever a new regime comes in, they have to kind of figure out who wants to be here, who doesn't want to be here. And early on, you know, through the middle of last season, you know, they got rid of the guys that they didn't think were either good influences or guys who just really didn't care to be around and stick through this rebuilding process. So they got a pretty good young group of guys. You know, now they just got to play better football. And, you know, there are some pretty obvious areas of need where I think they can get better. You know, if they can hit on a couple of positions, and I guess every team's looking for a pass rusher or mm-hmm. another pass rusher, and the 49ers are definitely in that boat. And if they get the number one overall pick, there's probably a pretty obvious guy out there for them. So, yeah, I don't think anybody here really thought it was going to be a quick fix. Landing Jimmy Garoppolo midseason last year probably clouded some people's eyesight as far as how close the 49ers were, but certainly losing Jimmy Garoppolo in week three set the team back. So, you know, they have to stay patient and they have to keep moving forward. And I think for a team that's, you know, considers itself on the rise, tomorrow's game is big because it would show just how far, I mean, to give you a really good barometer of how the young guys fit in and what they've done to get better here in a relatively short period of time.
How do you explain the Denver game? It just they really did play well in that one. What happened?
Well, I mean, the defense did play well. The defense has been a kind of a bend but don't break defense. You know, it's kind of shocking when you look at the stats, and you know, Robert Saleh, the defense coordinator, has been on the hot seat, at least publicly. I don't know so much if within the organization they feel that way, but where the 49ers haven't done anything is with the turnover margin. And this is a defense that's only generated 5 turnovers the entire season. So that's an area where they can definitely improve. But last week, you know, they really clamped down on Philip Lindsay. And then Case Keenum played so cautiously that, you know, the 49ers were able to keep the ball in front of them. Offensively, George Kittle had a huge first half, and then they couldn't get the ball to him at all in the second half. And so they got out to a good start, offense, defense, and then just kind of held on for dear life. But it showed kind of what you were talking about earlier, John, is that even though they're going nowhere, everybody knows that, they took pride in showing up and playing hard one week after just absolutely getting waxed up there in Seattle. So I was a little bit surprised because I didn't really know that they had it in them on either side of the ball. But they did well enough early in the game and built up that pretty big margin, a 20-point lead that they just were able to hold on. So I actually think tomorrow's game is going to be a lot more competitive than it was up in Seattle 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I would have to think it will be, too. Still, the Seahawks have the ability to clinch a playoff spot, clinch pretty much the number 5 seed. And by the way, have you ever – I mean, this is almost like watching some of the NFCs through like the 2000s, you know, maybe, you know, about, oh, I'd say what, 2003 to 2006, where you look and you say there may not be more than five playoff teams in this whole conference, you know, particularly with Minnesota struggling at 6-6-1.
Yeah. The Minnesota is the one that really gets me is, you know, they just talent wise, they should be so much better. And it's not, and they went out and they got what they thought was the missing piece in Kirk Cousins. And he's played well, but for whatever reason, it just hasn't clicked with that team. Yeah, no, there's not a whole lot of depth in the NFC right now. And you know, the playoff picture is looking more and more clear cut. And that's really opened the door for a team like Seattle to just kind of hang around and go from what Richard Sherman called them, a middle of the road team, to, you know, a couple of weeks ago to a pretty safe bet to be in the playoffs. So there are a couple, you know, it is a top heavy conference, and I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of drama here in the last few weeks of the season.
No, I agree. I mean, this is one where, you're basically just watching, a bunch of average teams scramble for the number six spot. Did turn out to be an interesting game at the top of the AFC with the Chargers and the Chiefs. But, yeah, you look at the NFC, I mean, there's hardly any mystery right now. And you look at the Vikings, I mean, you figure they'll make it, but they'll make it by default.
Right. Yeah, no, it's I mean, I guess it's going to be competitive. You know, the wild card weekend will be fun to watch. And then I would think that, you know, it's going to line up. Whichever team gets home field advantage is going to be the team that more than likely will make it through. Yeah, I guess Chicago could be kind of a dark horse in that, just because of that great defense they play. And you kind of get the sense with Mitchell Trubisky that, you know, he's not going to just give away a game. And so many times we see through the years, it's not necessarily when it comes to the playoffs, it's not necessarily the quarterback who goes out and wins a game. It's the quarterback who doesn't lose the game.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Getting back to the 49ers, as you see some of these young guys come through, I mean, of the young guys, I mean, who seems to have some potential that now that they're out there?
Well, I'll keep it local for you. I think Dante Pettis has played very well. Now, he's nursing an injury, questionable, and he was banged up earlier in the year, had a knee injury. He missed some games. It took him a while to round into shape. And then when he got his opportunity to be on the field for every snap, he really played well against Tampa. He played well against Seattle up there. Had a pretty decent game last week against the Broncos. So, you know, I don't know that the 49ers had to get him in the second round. You know, you would have thought that he might stick around a little bit later, and maybe they could have got him in the third. But and whether he's a one or a two, kind of difficult to say. I don't know that he's going to be a number one receiver. But Kyle Shanahan really doesn't look at it quite like that. He just wants, you know, a couple of guys. You know, he wants two guys who are reliable. And Dante's smart. He's played pretty well. They're going to have to add somebody in the offseason. They like Marquise Goodwin, but they don't necessarily like him as a starter. They think, you know, he's more of a toy, you know, a guy with tremendous speed who would be more effective in a limited role, or a more limited kind of specialized role. But I would say that Pettis is the guy that, you know, while getting his opportunity here late in the season with Pierre Garçon out for the year and probably his 49ers career is at the end of the road. He's somebody who hasn't been a factor in punt returns. They wanted him to really concentrate on the wide receiver part of it. So he's taken advantage of it, and he's shown that he can have a future with this team.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they haven't gotten him on the field, because he was such a great returner you think you'd have him have that role, because, I mean, he was one of the best we've seen recently in college football.
Yeah, and, you know, we know that he can be a game changer with the punt returns, but they just really, I think they kind of feel like, you know, maybe when the team is in a spot where it can really compete, that maybe they shuffle him into that role as well. But right now, they just want him to kind of find his way, really concentrate on being a wide receiver before they put more on his plate.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, probably a fair thing, the way to do it. Take us through the George Kittle story, because, I mean, he certainly has emerged on the scene as one of the best tight ends in football.
Yeah, he has. And it's interesting because, you know, at Iowa, you know, they ran a pro-style offense, and C.J. Beathard was the quarterback, and the 49ers were in on C.J. Beathard pretty early, and so they studied him a lot, and in the course of studying C.J. Beathard, they saw George Kittle, and they said, well, you know, he doesn't catch very many passes, but it looks like he has the ability, and he's very good as a run blocker. So they thought that he would go in the fourth round, and they ended up getting him in the fifth. And he had a good rookie season. Good, not great, but good. But he was always kind of banged up, and he had, you know, he missed some time with you know, sprains and strains and whatnot. And after the season, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch both sat him down and said, hey, look, if you want to be a quality NFL player, if you want to be somebody that, that we're going to trust and rely on, you have to take care of your body. You know, you really have to focus in on getting on the field, staying on the field. And so George Kittle really took that to heart and worked a lot on his flexibility, a lot on strength training. And, you know, we all know that that avoiding injuries in the NFL, you know, there's a lot of luck involved. But he certainly put himself in a position to remain healthy. And now he's got a really good routine. John Lynch said that, that he can go through the 49ers practice facility at any given time on any day and know, because George Kittle has a routine, exactly where he's going to be. And he said that that's something that, you know, he saw with Derek Brooks and certain players that he played with through the years, is that you, you know where a guy is going to be. He's found something that works, and he's got deceptive speed. He's got very good hands. He's got the hips that enable him to kind of shake free and be a deceptive route runner. So he's really done a good job. And, you know, we talked about the 49ers and their need for a number one receiver. Well, George Kittle might just be their number one for now. Certainly he is, and into the future. He's already set a club record for most receiving yards in a season from a tight end. And this is an organization that's had some pretty good tight ends through the years, including Brent Jones and most recently Vernon Davis.
Yeah. And then finally, I'm hoping that Matt Breida doesn't play this week, because it's too painful watching the pain that he has to go through with that ankle injury. I know he's questionable, but I mean, what the story with him, I mean, it's almost like they're pushing him too much. I saw him come off the field twice, at least twice, with the ankle injury. And, you know, he couldn't hardly put any weight on the ankle in that second half. I mean, what's the Matt Breida story?
Yeah, they're going to work him out before the game and decide there. But, yeah, I mean, I think you even saw him in pregame warmups after the 49ers had already put down their seven inactive players. You know, that's when Breida sustained the aggravation of an ankle injury that's plagued him since early in the season. And he's a little guy. He runs hard. He doesn't necessarily avoid hits. And, you know, from the moment that he took over as the lead back, he's been dealing with some physical stuff, and he's a tough kid. You know, there was one game where his shoulder popped out of socket, and he popped it back in and demonstrated to the training staff that his shoulder still had enough strength that he could protect himself. And next thing you know, he's back in the game. So he's a tough guy, undrafted from Georgia Southern. And, you know, really taking advantage and making sure that if he can be out there, he's out there.
Very good. Matt Maiocca from NBC Sports Bay Area, thank you for joining us, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Sounds good, John. I'll see you on the sideline.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ben in Spanaway. Hey, Ben.
How you doing, JC?
Good, how are you?
We talked the other day before that Minnesota game.
Yeah.
And you were right on par. That team is in trouble.
Yeah.
We both kind of talked about it. I don't know if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And people keep asking, what's wrong with Minnesota? It's the coach. You know, we'll get off of it, but his team's a mess. His assistant coaches are a mess. He's got a great quarterback, but they're yelling at each other on the sidelines, can't get it together. You know, they're beating themselves now. And I think going forward, they're going to start pressing, and here come the interceptions and fumbles.
Right, I agree.
I want to get on this 49er game, John.
Yeah.
We were just hearing about how that back is hungry and everything. And I think when you're young like that, you're playing for a contract in the NFL. You want to get on New England's roster. You want to get on somebody's roster. So these young guys are playing for a contract. They're playing for whoever they can next year.
Mm-hmm.
And that can hurt a good team. That could tear up the Seahawks.
No, because I think, I mean, that's the one thing. Even, I mean, you can say, okay, they lost by 27 points, but they put up 305 yards in the second half. And, you know, it's garbage time. It's meaningless stats and all that. But they did battle. I mean, they did the best they could to try to at least get some points and try to be respectable and play to the end of the game.
Yeah, and here's another comment, and it just kind of ties in with the 49ers. But I was listening to the guys talk the other day, like Wednesday night or something, and you're hearing them like, oh, you know, Russell Wilson can throw the football. When he throws for 200 yards and four touchdowns, we're great. How come he doesn't do that every game? And then the next game, you know, we put up 220 yards rushing, and they're like, oh, Seattle's the greatest rushing team in pro football. Why don't we do that every game?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was sitting there thinking, John, and I think you were probably on the sidelines for a lot of this. I want to get off and hear your comments, but I think if you took out the names and you were listening to that game against Minnesota, I mean, not the game, but you were hearing everybody's analysis of the game, it reminded me of the 49ers and Joe Montana. One day Joe Montana lights up the NFL. He throws for, you know, he didn't throw for a lot of yardage in the game, but, I mean, he'd throw 11 out of 18 for 200 yards and four touchdowns. And everybody in California is like, oh, we got the greatest quarterback. The next game, Roger Craig runs for 200 yards in the game. Oh, we got the greatest running back in pro football. You know, but 49ers just lined up against you, whatever it took to beat you. If you stopped the run, they'd pass. You stopped the pass, they'd run. If it was even, they played defense. And they just get another point than you got.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get off, and you've seen some of them 49er teams. What do you think, just in the comparisons of, you know, they've got so many weapons, they can just tear you up any way you want to play.
Yeah, no, back in those days, but also the scheme that they had, and also having one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league in Joe Montana. But, I mean, you look at that receiving core from Jerry Rice to T.O., I mean, you know, J.J. Stokes, they were loaded in the backfield. And so, and of course, the scheme was so different and so executed so well because, I mean, you know, you look and you see, all right, that was the first move past 78 when they took away the cornerback's ability to jam at the line of scrimmage to, you know, now attack. And basically put like in motion basketball plays out there to get guys open. And of course, when you did it with that kind of talent, that kind of coaching, and that type of quarterback, I mean, you get championships. That's why, you know, you look at Seattle again, you know, that's certainly not as talented. I mean, but they're getting better, but they have a great quarterback, and the great quarterback adjusts to what's there. They stopped the run in Carolina. So he passes the ball. They stopped the pass, at least with the cornerbacks that they had here in the Minnesota game, and now you run the ball. So, you know, you take what's there, and that's been the smart thing because, again, this is a first-year turnaround of the offense, but they're going to end up probably having over 500 carries. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Robert in Bothell. Hey, Robert.
Hey, John, thank you for taking my call. I just got two questions for you real quick. One, do you think K.J. Wright is done for the Seahawks?
No, I think he'll I don't think he's going to be back next year because unless he wants to take a really bad contract, I think that they'll probably not want to give him that third contract, even though he's so valuable as a leader and a player. And
exactly.
So that's still to be debated. But no, I think he's going to probably play next week.
Oh, cool. Okay, and this is my other question and just an idea I was thinking of. Lately, it's been in the news about these old NFL players having issues outside of NFL with CTE, mm-hmm. right? And my idea was this, and it kind of concludes with two things. One, NFL players want guaranteed contracts. And then the NFL has, you know, been broadcasting how to make the game safer. Why not do something similar or just an idea I thought of limiting the year's amount of certain player positions can play, but they get a guaranteed contract? For instance, example would be you're an offensive lineman, you're a defensive lineman. We're going to give you 5 years, 4 years guaranteed, but that's it because you can no longer play due to the injury circumstances of your position, most likely getting, you know, that CTE problem when you're done playing football. What do you think that would?
It wouldn't work because first off, you know, You can see now there's a reluctance to give third contracts teams because now, you know, you don't know the diminishing returns of that. So first off, at the first 4 years, I mean, you get basically, real cheap labor in some ways because, I mean, you're getting first round quarterbacks at $7.5 million. You get most of the guys at the minimum salary. And so now they go into the second contract. But then the problem is, you're accommodating so many players. And see, for example, one thing that people don't bring up, there's like 350 players on reserve lists.
True.
And so there's no way you can try to guarantee the contracts unless there's a specific type of guy that's so valuable that he's going to earn that. And because, again, I mean, the money gobbles up quick. They're not going to make exceptions. And so it's a nice thing to try to get, but you're not going to be able to get it. It doesn't work in a salary cap, particularly when, you're funneling 70 to 75 to 80 players.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. But have you heard anything about who's going to be the Seahawks owner for next year? Has there been any talk about that?
No talk at all.
No talk at all. Do you think, because what I'm hearing is, on just the newspaper, of course, is that Paul Allen's sister is more interested in the NBA than she is in
NFL. No, I think that's the reverse. I think she's more interested in the Seahawks than the NBA.
Oh, okay, cool. Because I was a Portland newspaper that I was reading, so maybe they were just kind of hyping that up more, the fact that, they were doing a trade or something, blah, blah, blah. But so you don't, just back to my original point, so you don't think, though, if you limited players to a certain amount of degree but gave them guaranteed money for those positions that, hey, you can only play 5 years, because we've found out that those that played longer, just have terrible afterlife after NFL.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of, if you remember the running back Sherman Smith,
right?
Seattle's first 1,000-yard running back.
Mm-hmm.
He was my junior high PE coach. I will never forget how, when he would sit down on the bench, when he would, tell his stories about the games, all we would hear was pop, snap, crack, and we'd ask him, sir, what is that? Oh, don't worry, that's just the pins in my knees.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, horrible.
No, it is. Hey, I've got to run, but by the way, Sherman was my neighbor before he just moved here about a year ago, so he was my neighbor.
Nice.
Hey, but I got to run. Thank you for the phone call, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, we'll get together, chat on some Seattle sports with C. Rog. Curtis Rogers next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.